Today's audiocast for Monday, November 6th, 2006 is made possible by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. I'm Mike Blakeney reporting for AvWebs Audio News. A Brazilian newspaper says the American pilot of an Embraer Legacy 600 bizjet that collided with a Brazilian airliner last month was flying at the altitude assigned by air traffic control. It said transcripts of the radio exchange between the controller and the aircraft showed the Legacy crew was told to climb from its flight planned altitude of 36,000 feet to 37,000 feet, where they clipped a GOL Airlines Boeing 737. The airliner crashed, killing all 154 people aboard. Legacy pilot Joseph Lepore and Jan Palladino, who were able to safely land the damaged Legacy at a military airstrip in the Amazon jungle, have had their passports seized by Brazilian authorities to force them to remain in the country while criminal charges are considered. Although it would seem a simple matter to release the transcripts and tapes and let the investigation proceed with the benefit of that crucial information, the Brazilian Air Force has refused to do so. The Air Force oversees the air traffic control in Brazil and told the Associated Press, it's normal to sit on this kind of pivotal data under International Civil Aviation Organization conventions designed to protect information given voluntarily to investigators. Just who the Air Force is trying to protect is open to speculation, but while it keeps the tapes and transcripts from public view, the American pilots must remain in what amounts to house arrest in a Rio de Janeiro hotel. The NTSB says a 13-knot easterly wind may have contributed to the circumstances that led to the crash of New York Yankees pitcher Corey Lytle's Cirrus SR-20 into a Manhattan apartment building on October 11th. An update to its investigation issued Friday suggests the brisk breeze would have effectively decreased the turning space available for the aircraft by about 400 feet to about 1,300 feet as Lytle and his flight instructor Tyler Stanger made a U-turn near the end of the East River Exclusion Area, a VFR sightseeing route that terminated near where the crash occurred. Although it doesn't come right out and say it, the report invites speculation that whoever was flying initially misjudged the available turning room and, while banking sharply to avoid the building, stalled the airplane. A single line in an AvWeb story last week about a controller caught napping has unleashed a torrent of response about just how much overtime is being scheduled in towers and centers. Prodded by a request from the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, controllers from Napa to Atlanta and Anchorage to LAX have responded with similar stories. "We have been working six-day work weeks since before June," wrote one controller. "We have no end in sight." AvWeb's corresponding controller maintains that six-day weeks are uncommon where he works, but concedes that other areas might be different. His main complaint is about having midnight shifts sprinkled in with day and evening shifts, which he says leads to serious fatigue. NAV Canada turns 10. The private company bought Canada's airspace management system, lock, stock, and console for about $1.5 billion in 1996, and since then says it's thoroughly modernized equipment and facilities, developed airspace management software that's in demand by other countries, increased the number of air traffic controllers by 250, and improved safety. According to its math, it's done all this while at the same time charging about 20% less on a per-passenger basis than the old ticket tax its direct billing system replaced. However, the company-generated news release glosses over some significant controversies that have erupted over the past decade, most notably the introduction of general aviation user fees. Russia has significantly relaxed constraints on general aviation in a move that's expected to stimulate the growth of business and private flying. Regulators have dropped rules that require GA operators to get permission for each flight. The new rules also make aircraft ownership, certification, registration, and maintenance a lot easier. Of particular note to the burgeoning bizjet community is the elimination of a rule that required filing of flight plans for cross-border flights a minimum of 24 hours in advance. The FAA has issued a special airworthiness information bulletin recommending that owners of certain larger Continental engines with ECI cylinder assemblies inspect the cylinders for cracks every 50 hours after they've accumulated more than 500 hours in service. The bulletin affects 520 and 550 series engines with certain ECI components. The cracks started showing up in 2003 and start as fatigue cracks that eventually go through the cylinder wall near the exhaust valve seat, and it causes decreased compression but is unlikely to cause separation of the cylinder from the engine, according to the FAA. In what it calls a safety admonition, the FAA is reminding aircraft mechanics to pay special attention to the exhaust and heater systems on light planes at this time of year. It's also a good idea to check or replace the carbon monoxide detector in your plane. Most small airplanes have some sort of heat exchanger set up on the exhaust system to provide cabin and defroster heat. If the exhaust system leaks, engine gases can get into the heating systems and pump carbon monoxide into the cockpit. The National Weather Service Employees Organization, or NWSEO, says it will take legal action against the FAA's plan to eliminate on-site weather forecasters at 21 air route traffic control centers. In a letter to the agency, Richard J. Hearn, NWSEO's general counsel, says the FAA's plan to centralize the weather forecasting operation in a single contracted out facility violates various laws that, in a nutshell, say it's the National Weather Service's job to provide weather information to the FAA. Hearn also notes that the National Weather Service forecasters have been consistently exempt from contracting out because they provide services that are inherently governmental. The future of airspace management might start in Cleveland. Census Corporation, in partnership with federal and local governments, is installing equipment at NASA's John H. Glenn Research Center in Cleveland that will link three local airports to a system that will include, among other things, 4D trajectories and virtual air traffic control towers. It's all part of the Next Generation Air Traffic System research effort to try to find technological solutions to the capacity and congestion problems that are looming in the skies. Data links, decision support systems, and a whole range of futuristic-sounding gear will be part of the system. AvWeb will be delivering the latest news from AOPA Expo this week to your inbox, starting with the regular Thursday AvWeb Flash on the opening show day, and then check your email box on Friday and Saturday morning for special issues written and produced from the show. Find all these stories and more online today at avweb.com. Comments on our podcast are welcome. Just email us at audionews@avweb.com. This report has been made possible by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. For more information, click on the AudioCast sponsors link. Look for AvWeb's next AudioCast on Friday, November 10th. Mike Blakeney reporting. Thanks for listening.